Not live and almost from Beverly Hills, it's the Bob Dean Show. Yay! Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah. Welcome, everybody, on our primary election day. I hope everybody had the opportunity to go out and vote, which I did.
I did.
You did not?
I still have my Florida license.
Well, then you need to get registered when you can.
Yeah,
I know. It's very important.
I know.
Well, anyway, I got my... I love our new...
The I voted thing?
The new I voted thing.
Look how big it is.
It's all, I know, because it's all in different languages. Yeah. Can y'all see that
nice.
Now?
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's all in different languages. It's in Mandarin and Feng Shui and all those things because I'm a white man of privilege. I don't know, so people hate me. But anyway, happy Election Day. We are broadcasting not live from the LA School of Comedy at 10835 Santa Monica Boulevard in beautiful Pershing Westwood. Next to the massage parlor. So if anybody has a longing to study some comedy and have a good time, Cindy Greenquist is a lady there in the LA School of Comedy, and she is a friggin' laugh. She just left with my keys. Let's see what else is going on. I want to welcome Natalia.
Hi.
Natalia Ziegelman.
Zeligman,
I beg your pardon. Right. And Anna, the colored lady.
That's me.
And we're going to get into saying hello to these ladies a little bit more. I want to tell you some really cool things that I'm going to promote myself. Thank you for listening to the Bob Dean Show. We are almost at 7,500 subscribers.
Yay!
In our first 14 months, you can now watch us on YouTube. Thanks to Joe White and Sandy. Sammy. So I'm telling you guys, I'm not kidding. I think I'm losing brain cells. I'm having
Sammy, can you wear a name tag? Because apparently brother can't remember
Sammy,
your name.
Sammy Junio and Joe White, producer and film producers, filmmakers, and friends. But you can watch us on YouTube. We're getting the kinks out of that system. You'll be able to watch it on my website, bobthesurlycomic.com. But please ask your friends to subscribe on iTunes. And you can also listen on your Android device at Stitcher, S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R, the podcast app, which is really cool. And this is going to air on Friday night, so I will be this Monday at the Ha Ha Club,
What's
Ha Ha
the
Comedy
date?
Club, June 11th.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking. The Ha Ha Comedy Club on Lancashire in Toluca Lake / North Hollywood. It's a great room. It's my first time there with a new troupe, so y'all please come out and support me so they'll ask me to come back. 8:30. Thank you, Dennis. Oh, and Dennis is here too. Dennis.
Yay!
And a shout out to our Zach. I'm telling you, Zach Herndon in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Zach.
He's
part of our original crew, and he helps me get stuff up on my website. But at 8:30 p.m. on June 11th, and I will be at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood on Monday, June 18th. It's pretty cool. I'm sounding like I'm really somebody.
Whoop, whoop.
I know. Thanks.
I know, right?
You are a working comic.
Let's see. I think that's about it. So we're going to get into the meat of the show. Anna is back. Anna is a good friend and a local comic as well. And we just have a good time together. So she's going to be my co-host tonight. And then, of course, Natalia is my friend, my new friend and good friend who Natalia has her own podcast as well called My So-Called LA Life.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, it's pretty terrific.
It is a really good podcast.
And your co-host, I got his name, Eric Sanchez.
Eric Sanchez.
I haven't had the pleasure, but he sounds great.
He is the technical genius and he bounces back and forth with me and my thoughts and everything that I write down and all my creative content. And it's just a yin and yang of greatness.
Yeah. Well, you guys are great together. And I love the way you said it's a podcast. It's dedicated to the documentation of Los Angeles and all of its glorious bullshit.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's like most of my creative juices flow when I'm in the toilet. And that's how I came up with this. Literally, this is how I came up with this podcast. It was about I was a year in Los Angeles from Miami. And I actually went to telenovela school in Miami because I wanted for some reason to become a soap opera actress for Telemundo. That was my dream. I don't know. So I came to LA and about a year in, you know, I haven't booked anything. Didn't do anything. I was sitting in the toilet. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? I'm like, what is this? And then like something sparked and I was like, this is like it's like my so-called life. This is not even life here. I'm like, it is, but I just place myself here. It's like this is my so-called LA life. And then bam, I had an idea and then I ran with it. And then it all kind of came together, and it was, I found this great producer, Eric Sanchez, who I invited him to be my co-host. And between him and I, and he's actually from here, from Hollywood, and me as a transplant, we came up with this kind of ingenious, snarky, kind of sarcastic view of LA life and its realities.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it. And if anybody has a chance, get on iTunes or on iHeartRadio. You can download my so-called LA life, and you can hear me and Eric.
And I love the beginning of it, too, with your intro is the jet landing that goes into the music.
Oh, yeah. That's Dr. Dre. So, and Kendrick Lamar. That's a great song. It just embodies everything that at least I see or I perceive when, you know, in the city, and things that I love and the things that I hate and the things that I think need to be said sometimes.
People don't
want to say it. People are afraid to say it. People are kind of like,
if anybody's going to say it, it's her, believe me.
You know, people are just they're either blinded because they want to be blinded because they're having a great time. And then there's other people, I think us. We're working ourselves to the bone, and we're seeing the realities of what's going on, and nobody's documenting that. And that's very important to document that other side that nobody ever wants to see.
Right. And you know, it's funny because not funny, but it's interesting because, we are comedians, actors, which means we're bartenders.
Yeah, literally.
Right? Seriously, that's why I open my act.
You can catch me on Fridays at Wally's in Beverly Hills.
Nat works right on the other side of the wall. You know, I pump where I work at Wolfgang's Steakhouse by Wolfgang's Wiener, 434 North Cannon Drive. I'm there Wednesday through Saturday. Please come in. Natalia works right on the other side of the wall.
Wally's.
At Wally's.
And 447 North Cannon Drive.
Uh-huh, right on the other side. You can see us both. But, but I was listening to the one episode about that you and Eric were talking about you being a Puerto Rican. I want to talk about being a Puerto Rican Jew.
Absolutely.
But he was talking about being the only Puerto Rican in L.A. Not only Puerto Rican, but being a born and raised Puerto Rican in L.A. when everybody just assumed that all the Puerto Ricans were from New York and all the Cubans are from Miami.
There's a better story behind that because he's half black, half Mexican. So everybody automatically assumed he was Puerto Rican. And that was the funny part because he never really quite fit in, which I understand, which took me to move to L.A. because Miami's a very Latino place. You kind of fit in. Like as a Puerto Rican, it's like we are the majority. And then there's a trickle of, you know, Jews here, white people here, little Asians, barely any Asians. And you come to L.A. and that's when I realized it was a culture shock for me about my culture, my heritage. I am Latina and I'm completely different of what I thought all my life I was. You know, I was a majority in Puerto Rico. I was a majority in Miami. And here for the first time, I was literally a minority. Oh, wow. And I never felt that, you know, that like it just felt I was distant. There was a wall.
Right.
You were born
in San Juan, right?
I was born in San Juan. I would live there till I was 21. And then I moved to Miami and I lived there most of my 20s. I partied, did drugs, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Did the whole shebang.
Mine was the 90s. Hers was more recent.
Yeah.
80s and 90s. But
did the whole shebang. Wanted to be a novella actress. Moved to LA with that dream and then came here. Found myself as a Latina. Saw that, like, that dichotomy of me being Latina and never understanding my minority and, like, where I stand in this world. And then I'm like... podcast. And then I met Eric, who's half black, half Mexican. And then that's where he's like, they always thought I was Puerto Rican here because he could look Puerto Rican, but that's horrible to say. What are you? What do you look like? No, that was the funny part.
Well, let me tell you all this. I just got my ancestry DNA results back.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it's so
it's not exciting.
Well, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. Like, I figured I'd have at least 2% Martian or something. But I'm 37% Eastern European, which is my mother's Serbian side. Mm-hmm. And then I am I am like 3%, 20% English. Great Britain.
I can see that.
Yeah. And then and then I'm like a quarter Scot and a quarter Welsh.
Yeah.
You know, which is really neat. But so yo to all my Serbian and English,
you know, it's
hairy back man.
Shout out to Serbia.
Yeah. There's
it's
enough.
It's really funny because I saw that you had red hair when you weren't a silver fox.
You know what? No, I didn't. I had brown hair and a red beard.
Oh, okay.
And it was weird.
Oh, it was an old school picture back in the day. Yeah, brown look red.
Yeah, seriously, that one from 19 that I have on my Facebook page is from 19 when I was young, and that's when I was going to be an advertising agent, and I carried my Minolta camera everywhere. You know, that's when I was a white man of privilege. No kidding. I was just a white kid from the suburbs of Nashville. But so the ancestry DNA thing is really interesting because it does fit. But it's up to you after you get the results back to go into more of a right. family history.
Yeah.
Which is still really exciting. Now, you are from Alabama, Georgia?
Born in Alabama.
In Alabama. Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Have you ever studied anything like that?
Yeah, you know, there's the Latter-day Saints library is right here. I spent an afternoon in there.
Are you church?
Mormon? No.
Mormon.
Mormon.
No.
Okay, so
a friend of mine has, I mean, like, she's hardcore. Like, if you really want to trace some stuff, this is a sister.
But so what took you to the library there?
She did, because I was trying to, you know, she does, the whole ancestry thing. Uh-huh. And so they had just released the census report from 1930. And so, you know, I was in, you know, she said, you can go in here and you can look. And so I went and I actually found where my Uncle George was living with my grandmother and grandfather in Birmingham. And my mother had not been born because she was born in 31. But my uncle and my aunt were there. And there was seven people in the house. And I remember this house because they were still in the same place.
But you found this researching here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
How cool is that?
And it's wonderful. The people there are very helpful. They don't charge you anything.
Isn't that probably written in your great-grandfather's handwriting? Because they sent the census out and they had to write down everything. No,
this was, honey, this was Alabama, okay? You know, like white people would come around and count people.
And that, okay.
And then they would say, what's your name?
Okay.
And then if you stuttered, then they would write your name
wrong.
Down. Yeah. If you said if they said what's your name, you say Meredith. They would write down Murdith. Meredith.
Oh, like phonetically.
It was horrible. Because nobody. I mean, like they didn't care. I mean, like
they
you know
did
they
not care,
they
yeah.
were trying to count people. They were just trying to count people. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
How many? You know, how many? Whatever.
Well, you know, it's really neat because I need to get my fat hairy butt out and do this because my Aunt Catherine, who lives in San Francisco, love you, Aunt Sis, she is researching my mother's side of the family, the Bozic side, where my grandparents came over from Yugoslavia when they were like 6, 7, 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And she's got a lot of neat history of the ship's logs and that sort of thing that she sent me. I have them in my drawer at home.
Wow.
Then my Aunt Virginia, God rest her soul, my Aunt Jen, who was like the matriarch of my dad's side, didn't know a whole lot about it. But she had written, I've got like handwritten letters that she sent me about my dad's side of the family as they came through from, Scott Welsh. I'm sorry, I'm getting confused now.
Where they came through Ellis Island?
Yeah, they came. Oh. Before Ellis Island.
Oh,
and
wow.
They were. My middle name is Densmore, and I am from the Densmore clan of Sullivan's Crossing, Virginia.
Nice.
Yeah, but the whole point about it is all this information is right there, and I need to be digging into it, but.
I'll connect you. There's a woman named Deborah Burley.
Please,
she is phenomenal, and she's really, I mean, like super reasonable. She'll take you.
We're learning here on
there.
The Bob Dean Show.
Yeah.
Yay!
That's really cool. Seriously, I want to. Before we go, don't let me forget about that.
Okay.
Now your family. Now what? Your folks are still in? Still with you?
My parents are still in Puerto Rico.
That's what
I was
going to say.
That was like something super sad, super tragic. I don't really want to get into it because everybody knows what's going on. Yeah. I think Harvard, like a couple days back, you know how they said there was only 64 people that died during the hurricane.
Oh yeah,
Yes, exactly.
Thing in Miami through Andrew.
I think they came out with a complete numbers, and it was in the 4,000s.
Yeah, almost 5,000.
And that I do believe. My parents are there. Thank God they're fine. There's still many, many parts of the island that are just absolutely horrendous. No electricity. The government has everything to do with that. But I don't want to get into that because, you know, everybody
Understood.
Can see it. And it's sad. But as far as my family's concerned, how I am a Puerto Rican Jew... It's very interesting. My both my grandparents were in, they're from Poland, and in World War II, they moved to Cuba because Cuba was the only people kind of taking like political refugees.
Oh, fascinating, fascinating.
Because so back in the beginning of the war, the U.S. did not want to intervene in this war,
right.
not to the later years.
Right.
So they wouldn't let anybody come into the U.S. So a lot of people had to disperse in different parts of the world. And my grandparents went to Cuba.
How old were they? Married then? Were they a young couple, or were they?
No, they were not. They were not married. They all come from the same little town,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them they moved to Cuba together. My grandmother, who's still alive, she's 94. The woman's still kicking, thank God.
And her name is
Rebecca Seligman.
Hello, right. Miss Seligman. Hello, Miss Rebecca. Seligman.
She still has friends her age that she's known since Poland, which is crazy.
She's really cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So they went to Cuba, and then, you know, Fidel, and they built their life there. My dad was born in Cuba, and then the Fidel Castro came, and then when the revolution came, they had to exile again. So these are people, I mean, I'm talking about a person and my grandfather who died in 1992, but my grandmother, who's still alive, she had to exile twice. And, you know, once was for complete religious Holocaust reasons. That a lot of my family did die in the Holocaust, and then the other one was political reasons, and then they moved to Puerto Rico, and then that's how I became a Puerto Rican Jew.
Now, when the Batista overthrow in 59, were they able to because so many came to Miami and just like jumped on boats.
I do believe my grandfather sent my grandmother, put her in a bus with my dad, his twin brother, and my older uncle. And there were, my dad was 7 and his twin brother as well. And my older uncle was maybe 8 or 9. And he just dropped him off in the bus and said, "You're taking a plane and you're going to Miami." They went straight to Miami. And my grandmother told me she was crying. She didn't know what was going on. And she just got on the plane and moved to Miami. No money, no anything. And kind of refuge there. And then a couple of weeks, I know, this is crazy. And then a couple of weeks later, no, not even a couple of weeks, months later, my grandfather showed, how my grandfather got to Miami, I have no idea. I don't think my grandma even knows.
Some of the stories are amazing.
People were really resourceful back then. I mean, you think about it. They had minutes to make decisions.
They had nothing that we have nowadays. Nowadays, we melt down when Instagram crashes, for God's sake.
And they had to talk to each other. They actually had to course their way to freedom.
And then I believe my grandmother tells me the story. When she got to Miami, she got stopped by, they were doing customs. Everybody was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, "You have 3 children. She says the story all the time, actually. She says, "You have 3 children in 2 years. And how is that possible?" And they were to the point that they were going to arrest her.
Are your dad fraternal or identical?
They're identical. But they didn't see the children. They were just taking her in and questioning her.
Oh, I see.
And they were to the point that they thought that she was like a spy, and then she, like, her story didn't line up. And then she says to me that she looked the guard or whatever in the face and said, "Have you ever thought that I could have had twins?" And then the guy was like, "Oh, really? Twins?" And then he was so amazed by the fact that she was having twins, they let her go. I mean, this is how she got to America.
But at the same time, I wonder on the opposite side, because Miami was such a sleepy little southern town back mm-hmm. then. And with everybody, wanting to accept as many people as they could get away from Castro. But at the same time, everybody's coming at once. And, everybody was just like,
literally like that. And then I feel like my grandfather came a couple months later, and then he didn't want to stay in Miami because this man knew Yiddish, Polish, German, and Spanish, and he did not know how to speak English, and he was afraid to stay in Miami because he didn't know how to speak English. And he decided to move all of them to Puerto Rico because it was Latino, Hispanic island. And that's how my dad grew up in Puerto Rico like that. And he met my mom, and then I was born, and then that's how you get a Puerto Rican Jew.
That is fascinating.
It's a crazy story, and it's a real
Zeigelman,
story.
Is that pronounced here?
Zeligman.
I'm sorry, guys. But the Zeligman family, it's nice to know you. It's a pleasure to meet you and hear your history. it is. Because, and I can imagine, first of all, is there really a convent in Santanco?
A what?
Was there really a flying nun?
The flying nun.
Don't tell me
you don't know about the flying nun.
I have no idea what that is.
She wasn't even born. Today. You know, yeah.
Was it Sally Field?
Yeah, Sally with the flying nun.
You really like me?
Yes, but you've never, TV. Are you not familiar with the flying nun?
I am now, but I didn't know that was like the actual name.
That's like, you know, Sasha, our friend who I work with, a really good looking Serbian guy.
Yes.
Okay, he speaks better English than most people I know, but he, you know, grew up in Serbia, Yugoslavia.
That's the only TV show they have.
No, they didn't have it. And so it would be hilarious because when it's slow, we're standing behind the bar and we're leaning against the bar. And this is how the conversation goes. Sasha, it's about this nun whose coronet can lift her off the ground because she only weighs 92 pounds. And he's like, wait a minute, are you talking, she really? And I'm like, yeah, she flies. And he's like, well, how'd you do that? I go, it's trick photography. The next day, I'm like, Sasha, it's about this family. The grandfather is Dracula. The husband is Frankenstein. I'm serious. And then it's serious conversation.
You're like literally getting to semantics about these like things.
The $6 million man. Love you, Sasha. But it was so funny because like a month later, he comes running into Wolfgang. She's like, I saw the show about the nun that flies. And I was like, yay.
Well, everything is on now. Everything is on. You know, I watched Barney Miller this morning and was cracking up.
I know. It's great comedy.
I love Lucy. That was my girl.
Listen, that is
Designing Women.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Delta Burke.
When the lights went out. This was when the lights went out in
Georgia.
The lights went out in Georgia.
Yeah. And my favorite line for that show is when Suzanne comes in and they're talking about the G-spot, the erogenous zone. And Suzanne's like, I know the handicap zone and the twilight zone. I don't know nothing about the erogenous zone.
Oh,
and
man.
That show is friggin' hilarious. Yeah. Noelle.
Yeah.
Noelle.
And Noelle ran away. Oh, Lord.
Were you ever a fan of that? You got
yes, to I was. I oh, my a, God. I would never forget that big speech. And the lights went out in Georgia.
Yeah. And it's a brilliant scene, too.
It was fast shaming. It was about fast shaming before fast shaming was No.
The night the lights went out in Georgia was in the first season when they were making fun of Suzanne because they thought she was Miss... She was Miss Georgia in 1974.
Yeah.
They were making fun of how she twirled the baton.
Oh.
Okay. Now the fat shame was brilliant as well. That show was
so on top of it, when
Delta Burke in real life gained a lot of weight.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, she did. And they wanted
her off the show.
Elizabeth Taylor, when she was saying that everybody loved Liz Taylor, and then as soon as she gained all that weight, they made fun of her. And Elizabeth Taylor actually wrote Delta Burke a letter in real life and said, thank you for addressing this. But yeah, that show touched every kind of topic.
Because we
watch it sometimes, you know, when I've had a couple of martinis and I got a half a pack of cigarettes and I'm on YouTube at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm like,
the only place you can see it nowadays, YouTube?
No, it is on.
It's on Netflix.
I tape it or record it every day. It's on like... Family Entertainment TV.
Oh, okay.
I've seen every episode 100 times, just like I Love Lucy.
Oh my God!
And that is friggin' good comedy, folks. I don't know how these friggin' shows like Two Broke Girls.
I have no idea, but I Love Lucy. I remember being about 6 or 7 years old and finding this TV show on TV, and I was so obsessed with Lucy. My parents couldn't even understand it. I used to take the VCR and record every single episode and rewatch them to the point that my grandmother and everybody in my family knew it. So they started buying me all this I Love Lucy stuff. And I was like 7 years old. I'm watching like old school, like black and white. And I was so obsessed with this woman. I would mimic her. I wanted to be her. I would be like, oh, but Ricky, but I want to be on the show. And I would do the whole thing. And I was so upset. I think that's when I was like, I wanted to be in entertainment because I thought that she was like just genius.
She was. She was the queen of the B movies before she met Desi Arnaz.
And then I love the fact that back in the day, you know, you had this Cuban man and this white woman, and that was unheard of.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they didn't want that. She fought for that.
Yeah. Desi Arnaz.
She's the first person to do three.
That
camera,
was Desi Arnaz. I remember watching an interview with Danny Thomas, and Danny Thomas was like, "We're shooting pool." It was somewhere in Los Angeles, and it was Danny Thomas and somebody else and Desi Arnaz, and they were all young men. And Danny Thomas, I guess, had Make Room for Daddy going on, and he was, you know, blah blah blah. But he's like, "I remember this crazy Cuban with the cigar kept going on and on. We were all shooting pool and drinking about three cameras." You know, having three cameras on the set. And I Love Lucy was the first that ever did that. And I mean, look at how brilliant it was.
It's to this day. Till this day, I still watch it.
Now,
I have my little niece.
You're a good I Love Lucy fan?
Yeah.
Well, because I have an I Love Lucy trivia game that I've never cracked open that my friend Catherine Williams, God rest her soul, I miss you, Catherine, gave me for Christmas years ago. And I put it in a box. And when I moved out here and I found it the other day, I'm like, look at this. And I've never played it.
Okay, we have cocktails.
Yes,
y'all
come to our dingy bachelor pad.
That's
and
funny.
We'll have drinks. And I smoke
that.
Cigarettes inside the house, y'all. So just open
so
a window.
Do I.
Atta girl.
Okay. I live in a high rise in Koreatown. Hello.
Mm, atta girl.
I call it the high rise because it's the fifth floor and it has no cockroaches.
Cockroaches is too tired to climb.
Yeah, no, literally.
Please stop at the fourth floor.
The high rise.
I don't know what's up there, but it can't be as
I'm
bad.
Like, do you want to come into my penthouse living dwelling? Uh-huh. It's the fifth floor.
See, knock wood. Knock wood. That's one thing. I've been in my apartment. It'll be 13 years on August 4th. And twice I've had a roach. Twice.
Oh, really?
Now, I think it's because I've got the unit that's one of those old L-shaped LA two-story 50s buildings. So when an earthquake comes, I'm going to be the first one to be crushed into the parking garage. But I don't share any common walls or anything like that. So, I mean, it's great.
No, my building is going to be 100 years this upcoming year.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, and it's an old school building.
What street are you on?
Mariposa and 4th. If any
Butterfly.
Stalkers out there.
Yeah. Well, they don't know which building.
505, if I'm feeling lonely.
Mariposa is Butterfly in Spanish.
Yeah, yeah, and it's going to be 100 years old, and it's by this famous architect, and it was supposed to be modeled by, like, New York standards, so it's all brick, and it's all, like, old school brick with the fire escape.
Have you taken pictures there?
Inside my apartment, yes, many selfies.
No. But I mean, like, of the building.
Oh, of the building? No, I haven't. Oh,
that neighborhood is pretty fantastic.
It's called the Rosetta, and it's going to be 100 years old. And the elevator, it's an old school elevator, so you have to, like, whip open that crazy.
The brass. Yeah.
The brass. Mm-hmm. Like, those hinges are 100 years old. And I know from, you know, people in Europe, which I hope you're listening to the Bob Dean Show.
Yay, the Bob Dean Show.
I know 100 years doesn't sound too crazy, but for us in LA, that's forever because that's when this city started getting built, and that was that area town was LA.
That was
Beverly Hills.
That was the center of town.
MacArthur Park and Westlake and all that sort of thing. That's where you are. That was the place to be.
And the old school Sears.
Absolutely. And the old apartments. Well, of course, the Ambassador Hotel was there, which has been torn down, and Bullock's department store. But where you are, that was the place.
Yeah, that was the place.
There was no friggin' Beverly Hills. There was no Hancock Park.
None of
I mean, you know,
existed.
Hancock Park, I'm sure, was just being developed.
All of that was land. All of that
was that's what I'm saying.
Land.
Hancock Park was just being settled around the late 20s and 30s.
Yeah, and even the, you know, the Hollywood sign, that was a sign because they wanted people to buy property.
No. It was a sign for a subdivision.
For a subdivision.
And have you ever been there? We were just talking about this yesterday, Dennis and I. Have you ever been to Hollywoodland? It is the coolest community. It's like little castles. No. I'm telling you, it is friggin' awesome. But the Hollywood sign was advertising Hollywood.
And they decided to keep it, and then that's how it all. But all that was being built. Like, LA has so much history beyond like what people think it is,
right?
From, like, you know, West Hollywood and, you know, Santa Monica and all that area, because LA really, 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 really started down there, and that's like where all the carriages were.
Absolutely.
That's where all the train, like the train stops. That was the hub of the city. That was
absolutely. And there was there's first of all though, I love this line, and I've used it before on the Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
About the movie L.A. Story with Steve Martin.
Yes.
One of the funniest movies of all time.
Yeah.
But when he's giving these people a tour, and he's like, and look at some of our buildings in Los Angeles are over 20 years old.
Yeah, I know. I'm laughing because I have people, European friends, so fancy of them. They come here and I'm like, oh my God, look at this building. Isn't it so beautiful, so old? They look at me like I'm crazy.
Exactly.
They're like, we have castles that are like 1,000 years old, Natalia. Calm down.
And we were just talking about, because every time we drive around, we went to Hollywood this morning, we were getting off at Thailand, and you know, when you get to slow down and you're in some traffic, you can look around, and up in the hillsides way over there by the Hollywood Bowl, there are just so many friggin' beautiful places that are built up into these, you know, the streets are like, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And like Baxter, you know Baxter?
Yeah.
That's the most biggest incline in L.A.
That's dangerous.
It's my friends Nicole and Ben lived on Baxter right at the very bottom. You had to go up from Silver Lake
to
the top and then all the way down. And the first time I drove over there at night in my old Buick station wagon, I thought the damn transmission was going to fall out. But at the same time, you think about that, because that was like when people were driving, and it's another fascinating thing. Is that the Model T was the car, all right? And L.A. was the city of the car. So in my neighborhood, where they're tearing down all the beautiful bungalows so they can put in the gentrified.
Gentrification.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? Just take pictures. I'm telling you, like, in your building,
yeah.
you know, that should be like just a day.
Yeah.
Just because there's so much stuff that it's going away.
But,
and all those, you know, all those little
nooks and crannies that really make this city what it is. And
well,
I love
any
going
yeah, any city what it is. And, like, and that's the thing is that I never had any idea that Los Angeles was as cool as it is. You know, I mean, that's what I'm saying about the little houses have these teeny tiny little garages in the back that I don't understand how anybody that had a car from the 50s or even now, they can't fit. But it's because everybody that modeled. The Model T was in L.A. was the city of the car.
Yeah.
And the Hollywood Freeway was the first freeway in the United States.
Oh.
Yes, nice. It was. And the 405 from the 10 to the 101 interchange in Sherman Oaks is the busiest freeway in the entire world.
It still is.
Yes, it is.
Some things never change.
But your neighborhood over there, now where you're in the valley, in Burbank.
Yeah.
See, and even Burbank, North Hollywood.
I love my little city.
I love North Hollywood. It's so cool now, but I love the post-war neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I think the houses are, to me, you know, they're stylish. Even a lot of them are boxy, but I think they're friggin' awesome. I mean, yeah. I just do.
My apartment, I live in this, it's three buildings. You can tell they were all built at the same time.
Yeah.
But there are all these cute little touches.
Yep. The arches.
Yeah.
Now, what street are you on?
I'm between Magnolia and Verdugo. I'm on Clark Street.
I know exactly where you are. Because I did a lot of shows over in that area. So. Yeah, but that's a great neighborhood. See, you live
really
in the old
is.
And you live in but what was more like 40s
yeah.
development, that sort
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, it's got that same that 1940s
awesome.
Tile in the kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Oh, love that's it. So cool. I call it a retro kitchen.
It's very
my friend Catherine
Farnsworth. It's a retro kitchen, yeah.
Hi, Catherine Farnsworth. She's a fabulous Los Angeles photographer, and she and Stephen are engaged, and they're going to be on the Bob Dean Show. Yeah. But anyway, she's got this kick-ass home in Toluca Lake, and Mo Howard lived. You know, back in the day, the house was built in the early 40s,
mm-hmm.
and the 110 comes right through the neighborhood. It's like three houses down, but amazingly, you can't hear a thing the way that they built the freeway.
Nice.
And but anyway, Mo Howard lived there. What's her name? Melissa McCarthy is building her house. It's really
nice.
And who's that? The really handsome black actor. He lived across the
Idris
street.
Elba?
No.
He's
on the same.
I'm telling you, he did that movie with Julia Roberts. He's been in everything. He's handsome as hell, and he's really cool.
Oh, Blair Underwood.
No,
that's it. Okay. Also a handsome black.
Good
man.
God! What was that movie with Julia Roberts where the car blew up and he was and he was in Philadelphia? He played the Lord.
Oh, Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington. I think it was Denzel who lived across the street for a while.
He did live there. You're
yeah,
right.
And he
You're
lived
right.
right across the street from my friend Catherine. And the whole point about it is Catherine's house is. It's just lovely. And it's not like a mansion or anything, but it's a big, spacious house.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of the whole story is all the appliances in her kitchen are original from the
40s.
Oh, that's
awesome.
It's like walking into a friggin' museum. And I'm telling you, it's stuff like that or antique cars.
Yeah.
You know, things like that are just pristine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, it's neato. Yeah.
It is.
You know?
I like that.
Me too.
It's fancy.
I like my kitchen. I clean my oven every 3 years, whether, you know, when the smoke alarm goes off, it's time to clean the oven.
Yeah, I don't use mine either. I'm like, storage, perfect.
Oh, no, I use it all right. I just never clean it.
No,
that's like my Christmas Eve party. And then we're going off the subject entirely. But 2 years ago, you know, I have my Christmas Eve party, the Happy Birthday Baby Jesus Cocktail Soiree, which
is. Yeah, which I love. Which he's this is what I love, Bob. And I'm going to cut you off because I will never forget the day that you invited me to your Christmas party. And I love you because you have these like quirks that are very antiquated. Like you're Xeroxing your Christmas invitation.
And I'm handing out flyers in color.
He literally is like collaging this. And putting in his
Actually, Pat Kellogg at the shelter did that, but
and then he did the Xerox, and then he just handing out flyers, old school. Please come to my party.
There you go.
Please
it's a benefit for the Humane Association.
And you know what? Things like this are lost, and I think that's what makes somebody want to go to a party.
Well, thank you very much because I have to tell you,
a flyer.
I don't think I ever throw a bad party. And my friend Jory Krinsky said it best about 5 years ago. And Jory was my first friend when I moved to Miami years ago, and she and her husband lived here in LA for quite a while, and she is very, jewelry is very vogue and very chic, and she's a Miami native. She's got jet black hair that goes down like this, and she's got very pale skin and dark eyes. And she was standing against the wall, and she looks at me and she goes, "You know what your parties are just like Holly-Golightly is." And Holly-Golightly was at the beginning of Breakfast at Tiffany's, that crazy ass party where everybody's packed in. And she's like,
"You're smoking cigarettes."
Yeah. And she's like, "That's how my parties are, I'm telling you." As I was saying, 2 years ago, I bought a $160 prime rib roast, and I stuck, and because I cook turkeys, I use my neighbor's ovens and blah, blah, blah. And it's just so informal, you know, and everybody, and we just have a ball. The whole point of it is that 2 years ago, somebody's like, "What's burning?" Of course, I'm smoking a cigarette. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, "I don't know." And I stuck this prime rib roast in the oven and forgot all about it.
Oh my God.
And I opened it up, and it was just
you never smelled it?
I was so full of Bloody Marys and gin and tobacco and pot and it's Christmas. Yeah. And anyway, so and I took it out of the oven. It looked just like a cartoon roast. I mean, it was like smoke and it was all charred. But anyway, I'm like with a cigarette in my teeth, carving it. And this year, I bought another prime rib roast exactly the same way, but I forgot to put it in the oven. Because my neighbor Shannon, who lives downstairs, was out of town, and she was gracious enough to let me use her. And she's a girl that travels, so her refrigerator was empty. And I'm like, "Oh my God, this is great!" So I put it all down there, and the next day I'm like,
"Where's the pot roast?"
I'll go downstairs to clean up and like Christmas Day, and I open up and I'm like, "There's that fucking rib."
Damn.
Was it still raw?
It was seasoned and it's in the freezer now.
And Dennis for next year's party.
Well, here's the deal, y'all. Here's the deal, y'all. Is that all the Christmas decorate, all the lights and everything, which is a lot, are still in two big boxes behind the door. And I mean, my apartment's as big as this room. Okay, so I was like, "Let's just have a friggin' Christmas in July party because everything is right there." So I think in July or August we'll have another party. I can make that rib roast. We can make it another benefit for the.
We can forget
shelter.
About the roast this time around too. We can
I'm not doing nothing.
I'm coming if it's in June.
And those of you who have been to my parties in the past know that traditionally you have ridden the scooter, the little power chair. We took it to the power chair repair place and went by yesterday for the diagnosis that she's dead.
No!
Yeah. And we got 12 years out of her, but the guy at the, what is it called, the Happy Lake Medical Supply Place on Santa Monica Boulevard, Santa Monica Cloverfield. That's how you refer to everything in L.A. You know, Santa Monica and Cloverfield between here. But anyway, it's dead. So... they're like $3,000, so I doubt. Maybe we'll just drive the station wagon around the block instead of riding the power scooter up and down the driveway. Well, but for those of you that have ridden that power chair, Nicole and Amanda and everybody else, you know, that thing is just fun as hell. It was fun as hell. Rest in peace,
rest
little
in peace.
Scooter.
No, just check out obituaries because there's like old people dying all the time. They want to get them jacked there
Honey, why do you think I'm in the thrift store all the time, girl? The one in Santa Monica, it's everybody from Beverly Hills ships their stuff. That's where I got it. But yeah, we talked to the guy, so hopefully we'll find a user. Now, where were we? What were we talking about?
What were we talking? We were talking about pet peeves, remember?
Pet peeves, yes. We went before the show got started.
Oh, my God.
Well, you were talking about... Don't even get me started on the phone.
The phone dropping.
The phone dropping.
Drop calls.
I mean, all right.
Unless you have Sprint.
No, I don't care what you have.
I have fucking Sprint. They suck.
I've got Verizon. I've had AT&T. They're all the same.
You
all have this great technology. You court us. You ask us for our money. And
we give it to you.
And I'm sitting in my living room. Now, my apartment... my apartment is like yours. It's really small. So I'm sitting on the couch. And I'm talking, and I go to walk into the kitchen, and the kitchen is like where that.
And that's it.
Yeah. And we're talking. I go, I get a glass of water. I come back, I sit down, the call drops. And, you know, you're still talking, which is very irritating. No,
yes, absolutely.
That's the thing. It's just that you're talking, and it doesn't even go bloop, or you know. By the time it says bloop, bloop, you realize that you're talking.
But you're talking, and then all of a sudden you're like,
I try to recall the person,
and they're trying to call you back.
No, it's not even that. I try to recall the person, and it says out of service area. I'm in the freaking kitchen.
I have the solution to that.
Tell me.
I do, because when they put new copper piping in my building, I've had Sprint. And I'm just like, why bother changing? Seriously.
Yeah.
Because I got the coolest phone number in the whole wide world. It's got a bunch of 6-9s in it.
Of course.
But when they put new copper piping in my building, I could talk for 2 seconds. And then when I'd walk outside 15 feet away from the actual building, I had perfect clarity. So if you contact your provider, they sent me, I don't know what the hell you call it, It's like a cable, a device, an antenna, a special blah, blah, blah. And you just plug it in and hook it to that. And it's like a super antenna.
So now you have to buy an antenna.
They send it to you for free. It's part of your phone contract. But you shouldn't have to. I'm just saying it's better.
The point is that if you're getting a wireless cellular phone, is to not have to have hooplas and little things attached to it.
Exactly. But they're suckering us. We're taking it up the butt from these companies. And you know something else? I have that old rotary dial phone, and I wanted to have it for kitsch. Yeah. I just wanted to have it's a Bell C500.
Yeah.
And I wanted to put it on my desk. This is 3 years ago. They wanted $68 a month for local service only because nobody's using, and all the wires underground are
rotting. Yeah.
And you know, people are like, you know what? And when we have a big earthquake or something, I'm telling you, you're going to see that we're not going to.
They're going to need that infrastructure.
Precisely. Because even during Hurricane Andrew, mm-hmm. when everything was knocked out, like in South Miami, it was such a hard one. I'll never forget. There was one, when the cell phones weren't even big then. They were just starting those big, ugly plastic things. This is 93. But when there was like one phone, and I remember, and it was in some movie they showed it to, I mean, where they did a remake of the movie, but my friend Kirsten lived in that neighborhood where one person had a line that went out and people were just lining up to use that phone to call family and friends and that sort of thing. Yep. But the cell phones, I'm telling you, the towers, boom.
So when the apocalypse starts, we need landlines.
Not even the apocalypse. Well, the apocalypse, but when the grid goes down,
it will, yeah, because something's going to happen. Right. Either like a tidal wave, an earthquake.
Precisely.
A hurricane, hello.
You've been through hurricane, right?
Yeah, many
hurricanes.
Have
you ever had any earthquake damage to where there hasn't been any power or water for a few days?
No, it's like the one in 94, we had no power for like a day.
Okay. Well, in Miami, like through Andrew, and I was lucky because I lived in Broward County, but I worked on the beach. But it's all connected. The thing about it is that for months, people didn't have,
I spent without electricity, I will never forget, I think it was like 28 days, maybe even more. And this was back in 2001. And it was terrible because I remember the government used to actually, this back in Puerto Rico, that they would turn on the water for about, like, in different sections for about an hour. Mm-hmm. And that, but it's not enough water to, I lived in a two-story house, so the water wouldn't really reach the other floor, and it wouldn't really reach anything, so we had to be in the backyard taking showers
with the hose. Yeah, because there was no pressure.
There was no pressure, so it was like a little trickle down a stream. And like, you know, my sister's trying to cover me with a sheet, and I'm trying to wash my hair, and this is for an hour, and there's five of us, and we're all trying to get we're trying to get a shower in with just like in like dirty, murky water, you know, like it's like the worst water ever. Yeah, I did that for about 28 days.
See, it's amazing, but seriously, in the heat, things like people lived like that way before air conditioning and all, but we're so dependent and our lives are so different, you know.
And honestly, like, shit, I don't want to go back to that. Like,
hell no. That's why I say this over and over and over again. You got to have at least $500 in cash in small bills hidden somewhere in your house, which of course I build it up and then I use it for pizza and dry cleaning and that sort of thing, and it goes down to nothing. And then I build it back up. But y'all make sure you have that cash because you can't use your friggin' Visa check card.
No, you can't.
For a 30-cent purchase.
And a $50 bill is not going to be.
Exactly. Because people are going to be like, sorry, don't have change.
Exactly. No, mm-hmm. That's true. And, you know, and I learned that because throughout everything that's going on in Puerto Rico, that was one of the biggest things, is that nobody could take cash out. So that literally, not only was the island was like complete standstill, but nobody could take their money out to get water, to get supplies, to get anything.
It's huge,
everybody was just stuck there for weeks and months.
And if is gasoline to put in your car, you can't buy it because you don't have any money.
No, exactly. Yeah.
But can't pump gas anyway. It's another thing. Always keep your car at least half full. At least.
Mm-hmm. Apart from that, people were like killing each other for gas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was crazy. But yeah, you learn things through situations like that where, you know, you have no power, no electricity. So, you know, let's just...
You know, I talk about the Nashville flood a lot, and I was on the phone with a friend in Nashville today who was supposed to be our calling guest, and she may be sooner. But, of course, the flood topic came up and how devastating it was and how nobody knew about the Nashville flood, which was, in fact, the devastation was worse than Katrina. And it was like a 500-year biblical flood. The reason it got zero press is, A, because it happened 2 days after the BP oil spill, and B, there was zero looting in the city. Zero. I think one person stole it back.
So it wouldn't make national. It didn't have sensationalism.
No sensationalism to it, so they didn't care. And I was calling.
Exactly.
Because I was working with friends on Facebook about it. It was horrible because I'm calling the stations going, please report this. These people are in bad. You know, it was a horrible situation. Yeah. But the city came together. The city stopped. And those that weren't underwater stopped everything, and if you, you know, old people made the sandwiches, and young people, you know, took them out, and the mm-hmm. people that could help people, you know, the city just came together, and it was really because a week later, Anderson Cooper did his 360 on the Nashville flood, and he made a huge apology to the people, of Nashville, and then of course, where did he film it from? My street, where my house was. Oh. Boom. Anyway, we're not going to go. But the whole point about it is, people, you know, is always put a little cash away. Yeah. Always have your bottle of water.
Do you have a go bag?
Have one from the Red Cross. I have I have one of those survival kits from the Red Cross. Very I got it from my neighbor who also gave me his old school microwave before he like dipped town, and that's a real story.
But now what's in the bag though? First of all, you're supposed to have a pair of shoes under your bed.
Yeah,
a pair of something sturdy because. Breaking glass and that sort of thing, you need to be able to put
like,
shoes on
right
away.
There's like a flashlight, there's duct tape, there's like food that you can just put water.
Powdered food,
Powdered food, mm-hmm. there's first aid kits, there's just like anything that you would need just in case if you have to like pretty much go on a hike. You know?
Well, seriously, we're going to think like, about that because the way things are going, Puerto Rico, this volcanoes.
Oh, my God, Guatemala.
I mean, two volcanoes?
I know, like, come on. I'm telling you, the apocalypse definitely upon us. I mean,
no, there's just a lot of bad, like, vibes in the air.
I'm going back to drugs and alcohol.
And it's I think you're still on.
No, alcohol, yeah. But, you know, but that's what
I'm still on. I'm good.
Yeah, hello, baby. I'm going to see if my dealer's in my little black book. Just kidding, everybody, because one of these days, the Bob Dean Show, yay, might, you know, make us a coin. But... Yeah, I mean, seriously, though, right before we were leaving on the news, there's two, a brother and sister live here in L.A. They lost 18 family members.
I can't.
Okay, I'm sorry. I know. You were just saying about but yeah.
No, but the thing, it's just I can't.
For the volcano?
Yep.
It's just so sad. So sad. I saw those pictures, and I couldn't even. It's like Pompeii.
How it happened. That's what the woman was saying.
Real life Pompeii. Like, you know, something so biblical happening
The woman in Los Angeles was saying that she had just been on the phone with her family. They were just thinking, it's making a little noise. And then, boom, just like that.
That's so sad. And, you know.
It's heartbreaking.
My heart really goes, like, to those families.
God bless them.
And everybody. And I saw, and, you know, the photos were so gory, but they were so real.
Yeah.
And you can't turn away because that's the reality of what's going on. And you know, and if you have a chance to help, even if it's just, you know, giving a donation or giving blood or food.
Right.
And anybody that's as fortunate as us, we may not live in, you know, mansions or anything, but we have a house and we have food
every day.
A roof, and we have transportation, and we have laughter, and we have family.
You didn't give up Starbucks for a week.
And we have the Bob Dean Show.
And make a donation.
Yeah. It's
but
just
see,
something
here, but,
something
but you
so
know what, though?
Like
this is that's interesting, though, because you guys, after the Nashville flood, it's a whole long and painful story. I was insured and blah, blah, blah. And then the thing that sucked is I got zero FEMA because I had insurance out the ass, but I didn't have flood because I didn't live in the property. We're talking about we are blessed to have a roof over our head. Mm-hmm. But because I'm living in a crappy one-bedroom apartment, I was not eligible for a nickel of FEMA. And then I couldn't get a small business loan because I'm considered a business because I had renters in a property. But I couldn't get an SBA loan even though my credit was great because – this is an old story you've heard a million times.
Oh,
but because I'm a bartender and I couldn't document my thing. But the whole point about it is even after I realized that it was – you know, I had a little office in my apartment and I was on the phone for 6 hours a day before I went to work, and I worked at La Scala and Wolfgang's trying to up my income. The whole point of the story is that nobody could tell me where a nickel of relief money went. Nobody. I contacted governments from Washington to local government. I was talking to every. I called the local governments in Nashville. I called the local governments in Los Angeles just to see if anybody could help. When they say, you know, text $10 to blah blah relief.
Yeah.
Garth Brooks did 10 concerts, and every nickel went to flood relief. Now, if somebody knows where it went, please let me know because I know it went somewhere. But at that time. 8 years ago, nobody in any government level or local, national could tell me where any of that money went.
Wow.
So my point is that I will glad, you know, I volunteer my time. I work with animals. And I, if I could, I'd be over there helping in a soup line or whatever.
You can always give it to the Red Cross. Those are legitimate. Like, you know, there's ways around. I understand that. I mean, there was a big thing with Haiti where the singer, the singer, what's his name? From the Fugees. What's his name?
Will I Am?
No, from the Refugees with Lauryn Hill.
Oh,
Wyclef Jean.
Yeah.
And he was taking all that money and he was giving it to his mistress. And she was spending.
You fucker.
And she was. And he is known in Haiti as like their god because he's the only one that's really taking Haiti. Haiti is like one of the most deprived countries in the world, if not like top three.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The huge Haitian populace in Miami, I'm sure you know.
It's terrible. And so this was a couple years back, I would say like maybe 8 years ago, and everybody was, because of the earthquake, everybody was doing the relief through his foundation, and it turned out that he was skimming off the top and giving this like bank account to his like mistress, and she was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on Louboutin and like Louboutin shoes and the whole thing. And I mean, you got to be weary of stuff like that, even with celebrity backup.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's other places, like real legit places, like the American Red Cross and stuff like that.
Because I don't trust any of them anymore. I'm sorry.
I mean,
because that would, you know, but anyway. But yeah, what a bad, pardon me, can we edit out my really screaming, fuck you, man. It's like what's going on in Togo right now. I was reading, you know what I was doing, y'all? I'm reading a newspaper. Please go back to newspapers. Because let me tell you something. Getting your news on a telephone, a phone, where you can only read X amount at a time and you get pop-ups in there, please, that's got to be planned obsolescence so you lose track of what you're reading.
Exactly.
Because I picked up a newspaper. I used to subscribe to the LA Times. I got it on Sundays. I picked up a newspaper last week and I picked up one at the barbershop yesterday. And it's fascinating because you read a headline, then you read an article, and then you flip over to finish that article. And then there's another article that draws your attention and it informs you about stuff that's going on. And like in the country of Togo, you know,
what's going
that,
on there?
Well, that there's a the the presidential family has been in power for 50 years, and people are revolting against the elections. And
is this in Indonesia, Togo? Where is Togo?
It is. It's in. Oh, see, here I am acting like I know it.
No,
you know,
idea
what I'm talking about.
How Togo is.
Thanks for asking that question. Can we just edit it? No, but I know it's somewhere because I saw it on TV.
Okay.
But the whole point about it is that
because everything.
But I wouldn't
TV
know that people
true.
Are. Oh, yeah. See, now I've been an ass. I don't want to.
SpongeBob is real.
You know, but the whole point about it is that, I don't know, I just hate looking at news on the damn phone.
But you know, we were
talking about Togo,
I don't do
and your people
that.
Are being, that's the people
I
are being horsewhipped
even,
when they were going against
phone.
You.
Yeah.
I want to make calls, that's it. A phone and the camera part's great, but all this other crap, and now all this shit that keeps popping up on it, all I do is scream at it all day long.
So this is what I wanted to talk about, that it scares me. This is really scary. So, you know, when you get on, you know, you get on your phone, you get on Facebook, you get on any other site, and you see all these sponsored, you know, things that are things that you're looking up.
Of course.
So anything that you look up starts popping up, you know, because you say that you're interested. But this is where it gets scary. Now, 2 days ago, I went to like a urgent care for a little, you know, thing that I had, and the doctor, I don't know if I'm getting a little bit too deep, but whatever, let me just say it. The doctor said, you should go to the gynecologist and see if you have endometriosis. And I'm like, okay. And that's where our conversation stopped. And now my friend that same night, she asked me, she's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, oh, I'm feeling okay. But the and this is a text. This is through text. Through text, I wrote, I don't know, but the doctor said to go to gyno to see if I have endometriosis. And that was the only time I've ever written that word in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time I've ever said it out loud with the doctor. And that's it.
I don't know. I'm already scared.
A day later, I was on Facebook, and sure enough,
one of my ads
says, do you have endometriosis? And now this is where I flip out. This is like, no, now this is like very, they're getting very, you know, they're encroaching, invasive, and through text, because I've been using Facebook my entire life, not my entire life, but the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have never not once seen one ad that says something so specific.
Mm-hmm.
Now a day
that's creepy.
Now a day before, I'm writing this specific word and something that's very, very specific, and the day later it shows up on my feed.
No, are you act like you're surprised.
I'm not surprised, but
the creep factor is
the
creep
factor is that they're getting into my text. I thought
they're getting into everything. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of making your phone so many things.
That's because so crazy.
In the old days, you used to have to carry a camera.
You had privacy.
I should not know certain things about certain people.
Yeah.
I mean, I can be standing in the grocery line. I'm walking up and down the grocery aisle. I should know you need to get your penicillin shot quick. Yeah. There are things that we should know. But, you know, we say that these things are, you know, that I don't like it. But we keep doing it.
Yeah.
You have to stop. I mean, you know
good
what I'm
point.
Saying? I mean, you know, just stop it. I mean, you want to really reach people, then stop using the damn, you know, just stop texting and call somebody and spend 5 minutes on the phone with somebody.
Write them a letter.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, like I write letters.
Dude,
I wrote
a
thank you note to a guy that was a bully to me. I was like, thank you for being such an asshole. Due to your lackluster leadership, my black ass is out of here. So thank you very much. And I gave him a Starbucks card for $4. I said, get a fucking cup of coffee, you asshole.
That's a great thing, you know. And I'm going to take a page out of
always write your bullies.
I'm going to take a page out of your book. And I'm definitely going to, like, I'm going to document that. And I'm going to do that, too, to somebody.
That's really great.
Always write your bullies, because those are the people that keep you alive.
Yeah.
Because now, because I've written that note, I know that our paths will cross. And every time our paths will cross, I can give him a hard look like.
Mm. Or every time he goes, how about every time he goes, he sees a Starbucks? Every time this man sees a Starbucks, he thinks about that thank you note. That's even better.
I only care about when I see him. I really want to be able to look at him across the room and just give him that one up and down.
Like, thank you.
And no.
No, that's like, what I mean. Like,
you know, are, you know, have you taken any leadership classes? Because, you know, are you still just an asshole? But writing a thank you note allows me the freedom to say that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good way to look at it.
It's perfect. Because he doesn't give a fuck about me, and I definitely don't give a fuck about him. And it was worth $4 just to say thank you with your lackluster.
Lackluster.
Yeah. That's such a great word. That's
now it's going to pop up on your phone.
Have you ever donated
to lackluster?
I know. It's going to be crazy. Next thing we know.
Do your fingernails lackluster?
I know. We're going to get Architectural Digest things on our phone from LA Architectural Digest the moment we leave this place.
Right.
Everything we just talked about is just going to start popping up on our phone.
There's 100-year-old buildings in LA.
I know. Like,
right.
Booze
ads and Narcotics Anonymous ads.
I know. Everything.
We're just kidding you.
Yeah.
You know what? We
got to
go.
This time
flies by on the Bob Dean Show.
Yay! Sammy is the greatest producer in the world.
Natalia and Anna for being here. And
thank you, as usual, Bob.
You guys got to come back again, isn't it?
Guys, check out my so-called LA Life.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. Please, tell us about it.
Okay, guys, check out my so-called LA Life. Is on iTunes and iHeartRadio. Just go to the search bar. Just put my so-called LA Life. You can download it. You can leave me messages. You can get on my Instagram under my so-called LA Life. You can see all the stuff in there and just, you know, give us feedback. I'm trying to get the podcast back and running. It's been a couple months since my last show. And this is definitely giving me a lot of motivation to do it and
as
do
well
it again.
You should, because it's a great show.
Yeah, it is.
And,
a good show.
And then to
it's
keep...
Not, you
and,
know, it's almost on par with the Bob Dean Show.
Oh.
Yay.
Well, okay, princess.
Well, no, I want to... Can I come on your show sometime, too?
Yeah, absolutely. When
that'd
I get it back up and running, you'll be the first guest.
And my Facebook page is Anna V, the Colored Lady Humor Advocate. I am not a comedian. I'm only a humor advocate.
I like
humor
that.
Advocate.
Yeah. Just,
and
you know,
I,
no
and
jokes.
And I like your thank you note.
Yeah. No, yeah.
And I like...
Send your bully a thank you note. You will feel fucking great after.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
going to. You know how many thank you notes I'm going to be getting now? Motherfucker.
I will never have to buy Starbucks coffee ever again in my life.
I only pick on my friends because I'm insecure about myself. Please check out me at BobTheSurlyComic.com, The Bob Dean Show on Facebook. And as Natalia just said, the only time we should have that phone in our face is when you're listening to her podcast or mine.
True.
All right. Thank you all. Please subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube. And love you. And have a nice day.
Yay.
Thanks, everybody. Yay.
Yay.